Blog Talk Radio.
Midweek Movie Geeks United, we're on the air. How's everyone out there doing tonight? My name is Jamie.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Hang on, let me say it again. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
My name is Jamie.
My name is Jerry.
All right, I just wanted to get that out, make sure everyone knew who they were dealing with tonight.
Yeah. You got this Avatar Coke Zero like commercial on the Blog Talk Radio page.
Yeah. There's just no escaping Avatar.
There is no escaping the blue people.
Yeah, and we have news later on in the show concerning Avatar. This is Movie Geeks United, and tonight we're going to be speaking with actor Matthew Broderick, who has a great new movie coming up. And then we're going to be discussing some movie news and some fun things related to film after the interview.
Unfun.
As opposed to, you know, what we normally discuss every other show we do. Jerry, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm good. We just spoke Sunday, but I don't imagine that you've seen anything that has wowed you in the 3 days since, right?
No, I just watched, like, you know, actually, I did watch last night, I finally watched, you know, I bought that Alejandro Jodorowsky box set a couple of years ago, and I finally watched El Topo last night.
Oh.
That's, you know... I've been meaning to watch that because I watched some of his newer films like while I was in college, but I've always wanted to see the older ones, and that's just quite an experience, I'll say that.
Now, we've talked about that movie on the show before because that's quite an infamous movie, and that's one of the ultimate midnight movies,
mm-hmm.
too. It basically started a trend for some of the great midnight movie theaters. In 69, was it?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, because John Lennon, like, wasn't it that he purchased?
Yeah.
He purchased them and kept them, like, just kept them
for
like the longest time. Fascinating movie, though. I mean, just really utterly fascinating. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Yeah, I haven't watched anything recently.
I watched Two Hands as well.
You watched Two Hands?
Yeah, the Heath Ledger's. I finally watched that because I got that from Netflix. Heath Ledger's on first. It's a crime thriller that he was famous for. I remember guys talking about it in the video store like back in like 2000.
He make it in Australia?
Yeah. It's also got Brian Brown. It's like an Aussie crime thriller. It's, you know,
right.
he's really weird to watch that and then to have watched Parnassus a couple of months ago. And surreal to say the least. But you definitely see what everyone was talking about like before 10 Things I Hate About You and everything. You definitely like see like there's just a lot of charisma, a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
And so you know, you can't help but watch that, and even watching Parnassus, you're just like, damn, you know.
The evolution of that career in such a young career that we witnessed, and just to imagine what it might have evolved into even beyond that point is sad.
I mean
it's River Phoenix sad, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
River
yeah,
Phoenix
no.
was
That's the right. That's the perfect analogy.
It's eerily similar. Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to let everyone know if you're new to the show by chance, because we're getting a lot of new listeners in recent weeks. You can learn all about our show certainly on this website. You can also visit our homepage at moviegeeksunited.net, where you'll hear the latest. You'll read the latest guest bookings and. You'll have an easily accessible archive of over 300 shows and 500 guests, and we've had some great guests over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
So I really encourage you guys to do that. You can subscribe for free via iTunes. Movie Geeks United, of course, is on this website at blogtalkradio.com/moviegeeksunited. We're also in a breakfast burrito, and we're a detergent. So we're Movie Geeks United is awesome.
Yeah, where do I get the breakfast burrito?
I don't know. That made no sense. I'm sorry. All right, you ready to start the show, and then we'll talk some movie news.
Yes, definitely.
Really exciting to talk to Matthew Broderick. I've been wanting to talk to him for a long time. You know and love him, of course, from films like War Games and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Lady Hawk, Biloxi Blues, Glory, Election, and the Broadway and cinematic incarnations of The Producers. But in recent years, Matthew's cultivated an assortment of some of the most interesting characters of his career in a series of daring independent films. And his new one is titled Wonderful World, in which he plays Ben Singer, a world-class pessimist who eventually feels the rumblings of happiness and hope in the form of Sanaa Lathan. The movie is now available on video on demand, Amazon, and Xbox Live, and it opens in theaters January 8th. Here is Matthew.
Your car is supposed to be flush with the pole.
What do you do, come out here with a ruler?
Your car is illegal.
You're like an insect.
And when the nuclear holocaust comes, there'll be swarms of you driving around in your SUV.
Park where it's legal!
Shut up.
So what's new in school?
A guru came to visit us.
Where's past lives?
In one, he was a prince.
That's the trouble with reincarnation. Nobody was ever a museum guard or a paramecium.
She is 11 years old. She still wants to think the world is a nice place.
Maybe you should look at the so friend, checkmate.
Why is it all about greed?
It is easier to keep people in line, appealing to their worst impulses than their best.
Eva, what happened?
My friend is diabetic. He needs to get to a doctor.
You should have thought about that before you parked.
911, what is your emergency?
Everyone has bad impulses.
Is he going to be all right?
Mr. Najay has gone into a coma.
Not everyone has good ones.
Most even. I am Khadi.
This is your side of the room. I'm behind the curtains.
Ben, I cook you Senegalese meal.
Just because I'm giving you a roof over your head doesn't mean you have to cook for me.
This substance is my brother to make him get better.
It's a shame.
What is?
To be so great at something no one cares about.
My country is very different. We have fun too. I love to death.
Someone and to also want something from them. Sweet.
What do you tell her?
You mean like who left who and why?
You are a good man. You gave him magic. You're like lion and hippo trying to mate.
Which one is the hippo?
You.
Empty.
They just do that so you'll buy more than you need. What kind of neighborhood doesn't have a gas station?
Residential ones, I guess.
When you read this, what was it about the writing or about this character that that you responded to?
Well, the first thing, honestly, was that I have been friends with Josh, who wrote it for 20 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote a movie I did with him a long time ago that was ended up being called Out on a Limb, which is really bad, but we stayed friends, and so whenever I'm in LA I see him, and whenever he's in New York, and so when he wrote it, I've always enjoyed him, and I was, if anything, I was, you know, I was worried if I wouldn't like it or something, but I really did like it, and he thought it was he'd finally written something that he thought was a good part for me. So I just responded to it. I thought it was very funny and, you know, and sort of thoughtful and a little bit romantic maybe, and I just thought it was a very good part.
Yeah.
And I just like Josh's writing. He's very smart and very funny. And
I know your affinity for the theater, your love of the theater. I'm thinking that one of the reasons why actors love working in theater has to be the immediacy of the audience, the interaction.
Yeah.
And I would think the closest you get with a film, particularly an independent film, would be on the festival circuit. So when you talk to the audiences that watch this movie,
Right.
When you've seen screenings of it, what are they responding to in it, do you find?
I'm not sure. They seem to root for the guy to become less unhappy or negative or whatever you want to call it. Pessimistic. It's a sort of a subtle thing, but I think everybody wants him to kind of get out of his funk or his little apartment or his horrible job and do better.
Yeah.
And I think it's also it's sort of satisfying that it doesn't all end up perfectly either. So it's kind of believable. It's just somebody sort of making a step toward a better mood or a better life. And I don't know, they seem to sort of believe the characters. They, they don't question any of it that I could tell. And I think they like the relationship with the daughter and with the roommate and with Sanaa. I think it's a very nicely made, all the pieces of it seem to work. But at least that's what I take from it. I don't know what the audience does exactly.
How come you quit singing for children, Ben?
The record company said that they'd produce an acoustic solo album if I went on a national children's tour.
And the record company went back on its word?
No, they produced it, but they dumped it. They didn't promote it. I didn't advertise. I said it wasn't accessible.
Bottom line.
Bottom line.
You have CD? The one the record company did not want to promote?
You don't want to hear that.
I would like to hear it.
You're probably one of 10 people who's heard this.
Why you got angry? It is maybe too quiet for the world.
I would think that would be a fine line to tread, because your character is the ultimate pessimist.
Mm-hmm.
but how do you not come across tedious or infuriating?
Yeah.
How do you keep the audience on your side and rooting for you?
Well, I don't know. there's a line in the movie that inside every pessimist beats the heart of a disappointed optimist or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what. But it's really just that he's had some disappointments, I think. I don't think he's deeply pessimistic, actually. I also personally do think positive thinking gets too much play. You know, that everybody has to feel positive all the time can be very draining. I think you want to feel accurately about things, you know. You should be aware when things are not right or not going well. So when everybody keeps telling you, as long as you feel good, if you pretend to be happy about it, it'll be all right. I get very tired of that.
Yeah.
So I sympathize with him saying, you know, the positive thinking is that, you know, it's a scourge to him. I mean,
I know that
think accurately, I think.
Right. I know that this is a fascinating character, and you've done so many indelible characters in your career, and it seems that you've kind of made a move into doing more and more independent movies in recent years, like this one.
Yeah.
Do you find them more actor-friendly at all, or more conducive to creativity?
Sometimes. Honestly, I wish this had been a big-budgeted studio movie and been the same. You know, it's nice to have all that time, and, you know, we shot in 22 days, and And I mean, for me at this point in my career, independent parts have been much better than the ones I get offered in studio things.
Right.
So that move has been put on me a little. You know, I wouldn't want to just say I decided to just do independent movies. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you do have a little more. It seems like freedom to be original, or to be, I mean, for a writer, you know, to tell a small story. I mean, that there's no one big hook in it exactly. It's just a kind of personal story, really, about Josh, I think.
Right.
And those are hard to make when there's a huge amounts of money at stake. Although that said, even when there's a little money at stake, everybody sure does have opinions. I mean, that doesn't go away.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know.
You say that it was shot in 22 days, and I'm wondering,
so.
is there a value in that speed or that pace for you as an actor?
Yes, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, you have to get lucky. Like, if you don't have time to fix things, so it's not always good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's nice because you don't have as much time to overthink things and. You have to just sort of trust yourself and trust the material and trust the director. I mean, it's just there's not too much time to question things or to overly cover things and then edit them like crazy. So it's a little more lifelike.
Yeah.
You know, you have to sort of make a decision and go with it.
Well, I would think, too, concerning the trust issue, that being directed and working from a script by your good friend Josh,
mm-hmm.
has to help because you have that built-in
yeah.
rapport. Yeah.
Yeah, he told me when I'm doing interviews to keep bringing up the shorthand of friendship.
Right.
That's the phrase he wants me to use. But, yes, thank God it was very easy. You know, we have basically exactly the same sense of humor. We both grew up in the same period in New York. And him near Columbia and me in the Village, which is almost the same thing. And so we have a very similar frame of reference. But that said, you can also get in trouble with friends, too, you know, because there's all sorts of other things play into it. You're not just talking about the work. You're talking about you don't have any right to tell me what to do. You know, there's all different layers can happen.
Yeah.
But luckily, with Josh, we were able to be professional, or relatively professional, and then right after we'd shoot, we had a little apartment. We were in an apartment complex off the side of a highway, an extended, you know, businessman hotel. I don't know what it was, but our apartments were across the walkway from each other. So after we have a beer after work, so even if we didn't agree on something, we always were. We're friends by the end of the shooting days.
Yeah, that's nice. It's always good if you remain friends at the end.
Definitely. Oh, particularly when you're in a very isolated part of Shreveport where you don't know a soul.
Let me ask you just a couple of quick questions about the craft of what you do. Mm-hmm. Because reading previous interviews with you, I understand that you don't consider yourself, you know, quote-unquote, very, very method. But when you look at a script, what's the work that you do to make it real for you?
Well, it depends on the thing, but I mean, if it's something very foreign to me, I might have to, you know, learn about some subject, you know, the Civil War or something like that. But if it's most of that, I find has been done by the writer, so I don't do a lot of like research type stuff. I know some actors do. I basically try to understand the story as well as I can, and if there's something I don't understand, I try to figure it out, and I'll ask anybody, and I try to get to a point where all the scenes are as active as possible, where I know what it is I'm doing. Not to sound like acting school, but You have to be doing something, not just sitting there. You know, I have to be aware of what my intention, some people call it, or what's happening in a very alive way at the moment in that scene. So I want to find those moments throughout the whole thing if I can.
But your father, I'm thinking of your father. He was an amazing actor, and you've worked with so many greats in your career, Brando and Hoffman and Connery and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Is there a single lesson or observation that has, when you've been working with these people or from your father, that you found most useful or meaningful to you in your career?
I don't know if there's a single one. I remember my father once, when I auditioned for something and didn't get a part, and I was really disappointed, and he said, "You always think you didn't get it because I blew it or something." And he said, "How do you know they didn't blow it? Because they don't know any more than you, and they choose the wrong person all the time."
Yeah.
So that was kind of a relief to me, you know, that the people on the other side of the desk don't know any more than you know.
Right.
That was good for starting out. And then, I don't know about acting. You learn from watching people. The one thing in common with all those people you mentioned is they all, no matter what they say, they work really hard.
Right.
You know, they might all say, "This is bullshit, who cares?" But they all really try, and they all get really mad when things don't go well and really happy when they go well. Like, they all care about it. A lot.
And when you're talking about the satisfaction that you get from performing,
mm-hmm.
Has that changed or matured over the years for you since when you first started?
Yes, I think to some degree. I think when I was starting out, I could sort of think of it like a hobby, which was nice. You know, I thought, I'll do this for a while, and if it doesn't work out, I'll do something else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But as you get older, you have to be careful of a creeping desperation, you know, to kind of... I know I can't suddenly do something else for a living now, probably, so
right.
I feel slightly more... But it also changes year by year. Like, I just did a play that I had a really great time in, and I felt like I knew what I was doing, and I felt like I was a good actor, and so I feel very revived. But for about a year before that, I felt like I'm just basically getting worse every year, and this stinks. And I think that's my age.
But does theater kind of revive you?
Yeah,
in a way?
It kind of just made me feel good again. And actually, this movie I feel good about. But I've had a few where I didn't feel so good. And it's very subjective. But
right.
When I was younger, I don't think I cared so much about the result. I just was moving on to the next thing. And I don't know.
Well, I want to, before I let you go, because I know you're on the clock here. You mentioned that play, and I think that play was written by your other friend, Kenny Lonergan, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
What's going on with Margaret? I've been reading about this for years. What's happening with it?
You should call him. I don't know. I'm in it. It's very close to done. I've seen it. It's been very close to done for a long time. There are now legal issues, which I'm not qualified to go into, I don't know what the... I think there's a hope that it could come out this year, but it has been very problematic for him to get finished. Not all because of him, I'm not saying, but it's been very hard to finish. Although, if you saw the movie, you'd say, well, that seems finished.
Yeah.
Like, it's really close. It's just they can't agree on the last 20% or whatever.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And I love you and everything you do, and I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Yeah, you'll like that movie because he's a great writer.
He's one of the best. I can't wait to see it.
I agree.
Let's do this again sometime. I enjoyed
it.
Okay.
It'd be my pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye, Matthew. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, Matthew Broderick, the movie is Wonderful World. It opens up January 8th in select theaters, and it's currently available on video and on demand. And
that was a really good interview.
Amazon on demand. You know, and Xbox. Xbox Live. I guess you can watch movies now on Xbox Live.
Yeah, they have a whole, I think you can stream Netflix through there, too, I think.
Wow.
So,
It's a whole new era. I mean, so many more possibilities of getting your movie out there.
It's definitely good for the small film. I wanted to just address, talk about something he brought up, which is I've never heard an actor actually say this, but he's right. It is like he gets to really shine this decade in the indie films. I think he enjoys. It sounds like he realizes that's where he really can be, you know, whoever he wants to be, as opposed to a studio film where he gets sort of, you know, how should we say it, you know, locked down in a certain kind of style that he can't, he doesn't have the flexibility. But it's usually, I've never actually heard the actor say that. That was very
well. Yeah, and he was honest about that, and I can see that. You know, a lot of great actors are moving to television because great characters are there. Big studio movies, at least the ones that he is offered at this stage in his career, aren't as interesting as the indies that he's offered.
Right.
I mean, he's
that's true.
And plus the company he keeps in some of these movies. Last year I saw a movie he did called Diminished Capacity, where he was with Alan Alda and Virginia Madison, and it was a really good movie. And this one's a really good movie and a very interesting character. But what also struck me is how honest he was about the ebbs and flows of his own confidence as an actor. Yeah.
I didn't expect that. This one sounds really interesting. This sounds it has some of the similarities to that Noah Baumbach movie coming out later on, Greenberg.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's high up on my list, but I definitely want to check this out because I really liked him in that one, You Can Count on Me. And I loved him in Election.
You Can Count on Me, to let everyone know, Kenny Lonergan, who wrote and directed You Can Count on Me. I think, did he win the Oscar for the screenplay, or he was just nominated?
I think he was nominated. I'm not sure if he won or not, though, but that's a great film. I love that movie.
Yeah, and it's one of the most acclaimed screenplays of that year, and it really brought Mark Ruffalo to the forefront. That's a great performance from him and Laura Linney. So this is his follow-up. It's called Margaret, and to give people an idea of how long this has been held up. We started the show going on 3 years ago, and that was one of the first requests I sent in was for interviews concerning Margaret. So it must be torturous for him because it's been locked away for this period of time. Anyway, that's Matthew Broderick. If you missed any portion of that interview, it will be available for replay after the show closes tonight. And we're going to bring on our other co-host now, Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hey, how are you?
How you doing, man?
Doing great.
We haven't spoken to you for a little while. Have you seen anything that you've been taken by lately?
No, I haven't seen anything I've been taken by. I've been taking in a lot of Blu-rays lately. I got a hell of a lot of Blu-rays for Christmas, so just been enjoying my new television, my new HD TV that I bought, and my new sound system, and
you suck.
All the great.
We've been doing that. The Blu-ray is kind of the way to go.
It's pretty neat, Blu-ray. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm jumping on the train a little late here, but for a movie lover, obviously we all had VHS cassettes for years, and then we replaced those with DVDs. And when Blu-ray came out, I was a little bit like, I don't know. I don't really see the point. Maybe I'll just get the action movies in Blu-ray, and I'll just get every. Now everything has to be Blu-ray. Like,
I hear you.
It looks and sounds so amazing. Some of these movies I'm watching again, it's like I'm seeing them for the first time, and absolutely seeing things in them that you would never see before. Now, partially that's because I've got a huge fucking TV, and.
I feel relatively hip now because thanks to my girlfriend, I actually have a Blu-ray player now. So I'm one of the guys now.
Cool.
There you go.
I want to talk about a couple of things in the news. I'm glad that we're all together to do so. Speaking of technology and advancements and that kind of thing, we've been talking a lot about 3D, especially in relationship to Avatar, and I'm sure if Avatar failed, which it absolutely has not.
No,
has
I would
not
say that, that's out of the question now.
But if it did fail, I'm sure there would be questions about the future of 3D. But because it is such a massive success, I think they're just bolting forward with 3D. And speaking of home entertainment, they're bringing it to the home. Samsung is releasing a line of 3D televisions this year, by the end of the year, I think. And ESPN announced that they're starting their own 3D network.
Wow.
so they're first in line. So pretty soon, all the couch potato guys on Sunday will be sitting there wearing the glasses and watching the game, which is a perfect application for that technology, at least on the forefront, because if you remember, that was the big sell for HD, as much as anything else, was the sporting events.
Right.
You know, so anyway, if that interests you at all, it's out there. Hangover, you guys both like The Hangover, right?
Yes. Didn't you watch The Hangover?
I saw it.
James. Okay.
What a glowing endorsement.
I've never heard such a glowing endorsement in my life of a film, and that definitely ranks as the best.
I thought the sound was in sync with the picture. I thought it was great.
Jesus Christ.
No. I would have enjoyed it a lot more had I seen it with an audience. I wish I would have seen it
with an
audience.
It's definitely that kind of movie. But I liked it even watching it at home just with my family again. I thought it was a good time.
It's the number one selling DVD comedy of all time already.
Jesus Christ.
I know. And it's happening faster and faster. Because if you think about the Dark Knight,
mm-hmm.
and its entire theatrical run, it made $1.1 billion worldwide or something.
Yeah.
555 here in the States. And Avatar is overtaking it in 3 weeks.
Yeah, but that's also and while that it is incredible, you also have to take into account in North America the 3D ticket prices and the IMAX ticket prices are a lot more than the regular prices, but I'm not to discredit it. I mean, it's still an incredible rate that it's done this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Avatar also has another dimension that the Batman movie did not. I mean, the Batman movie is going to appeal to a certain amount of people, absolutely, and then it'll gain a little bit of word of mouth, and obviously it did gain quite a bit of word of mouth.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have that other element that Avatar does, which is, this is something you've maybe never seen before.
That's true.
It certainly has. This is a comic book movie like you've never seen it before, but it's ultimately a comic book movie. Avatar, say what you will about the story, say what you will about the Dances with Wolves comparison, it definitely is a movie-going experience that you haven't seen before. So it's getting those people out of their houses, or getting them to get away from the plow, off the farm, and drive an hour to the movie theater and see Avatar in 3D.
That's absolutely true.
That is, I mean,
and worldwide. I mean, this thing just opened in China on Monday, and it did $5 million on Monday in China, which is a record-busting event for China, especially since in a lot of parts of that country. They have very severe weather that they've had to trek through. I mean, life-endangering situations.
Yeah, but, no, you're right.
That's true. You also got to think they're very small, so they can pack more of them into a theater. So.
There you go, folks, right there. Expert commentary. You won't hear that anywhere else. It is something. This is the one movie. Like, people say, oh, wait till it comes on TV or something. No, you should really go out and see it, because you've never, even if you've seen like a lot of 3D movies, I've never seen a 3D movie where you feel like you're actually in like many of the scenes. You're there.
That used it in quite this way, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something that you should definitely see like once in the theater. Like, I'd like to go see it again in IMAX, take my brother to see it in IMAX, but I'm glad I saw it in the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really made a difference.
Let me ask your opinion on this. This was just announced yesterday. And Jerry, I know you particularly like Bond and
It's a wild choice.
Chris and I are lukewarm at best on Bond.
Okay, what about Bond? But what do you think of this, though?
Okay, it was announced that Sam Mendes, director of American Beauty and Revolutionary Road, it will direct the next Bond picture. What do we think of that choice?
I'll let you guys go first.
I think it's interesting. I'm very hesitant to sort of get too excited about it, because I do feel like that franchise sort of confines any director, no matter who it is, to a certain kind of filmmaking, really. I mean, if you look at all the Bond movies, there's only such a big continuum of what types of films they are. You've got basically Casino Royale is about as laid back and subdued as it gets, and then you've got the other you know, like the Pierce Brosnan movies, for instance, something like Tomorrow Never Dies is on the opposite end of the spectrum, which is about as big and action-packed as it gets. But even among that continuum, that's not a huge difference. So you really, there's only so much you can do with one of these movies. I think it's interesting that they're going to get a guy who makes movies about people. I think that's an interesting choice.
Right. But at the same time, you're right. This movie series, we had a call on the line. I was going to pick it up. This movie series sucks the personality out of every director that touches it, really, in a way, in the large majority of the recent series. I mean, Michael Apted, you can't get more people-friendly director than him. And you watch a movie like, which he did, what is, The World Is Not Enough? Is that the one he did?
He did The World Is Not Enough, which had the potential to be one of the best ones and just sort of fizzled halfway through.
Mm. Yeah. Mark Forrester, of course, Quantum of Solace, which I enjoyed.
The last two are so much better than what everything... the previous ones after Sean Connery, I have to say that I do think they're different. My thing is Bond going to get married and move to the suburbs and suffer from depression?
And watch a bag like floating in the wind?
Or have a wife that's going to be suicidal and like commit suicide? I mean, what's going to happen here?
I don't know. Go ahead.
I was going to say the bag would be floating in the wind and then he would attack it with an Uzi, basically.
Yeah. I think he's a class director, obviously, but for the real motivation behind him doing a Bond picture, I think you need to look at his grosses. He started out as – because if you look at the films that he's made, it's a straight slope in terms of gross. American Beauty, very successful. Road to Perdition, a little less so. Jarhead, less so. Revolutionary Road, I did not realize, even with the power of DiCaprio and Kate Winslet reteaming, it only made $22 million domestic.
It didn't get the widest release, though, either.
But that's anemic.
Yeah.
And then Away We Go, of course, less than half of that total. So now he's definitely going to make a high-grossing movie with Bond. I mean,
I think so.
Urkel could direct Bond, and it would be a high-grossing project.
I think, though, Away We Go was by far his best movie, for me at least.
Right.
And I guess, though, there comes a point, doesn't matter who you are, and this goes, I guess, with actors, too, like Clooney or something, it doesn't matter how critically revered your films are, if they don't make a lot, you do need a hit, this is like what John Sayles does, you write the script for the blockbuster
right.
so you can direct your finance your own small little film that you want to make.
That's what I'm saying. This is career longevity. This is the move he's made now. Maybe that's a cynical position. Maybe he's always dreamed, as many directors have, of directing a Bond movie.
But all those great directors, they didn't get a chance, and it's not for lack of trying. From everyone, from Steven Spielberg to Oliver Stone to Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, have all had an interest in directing a Bond movie and were turned down, not because they didn't want to do it, they were turned down because they're sort of have an uncompromising vision as directors.
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
And the Broccolis have an ironclad ruling over those films.
Yeah.
They always have.
It wasn't, though, the case, though, because you did have directors like Terrence Young in the early days who did set the standard. And they were the ones who actually took
sure.
because they were experienced action directors. But then I think once you get into the Roger Moore era, and especially with Timothy Dalton, especially with Pierce Brosnan, I think when they really brought, because remember, Broccoli wanted to sell the series after License to Kill because that got slaughtered because of Batman and Lethal Weapon 2, and he put the rights up to sell them because they were just like, okay, we're not going to do Bond anymore. No one would buy them. They're like, come on, you got to make Bond. So they were in the wilderness for a couple of years. Then they finally got Pierce Brosnan, who was no longer doing Remington Steele and wasn't doing anything else, and he was the man who was born to play Bond. But look what they gave him. After the first one, you got to hand it to Martin Campbell. He knows how to re-energize the series. But then after each one, you know, it's like with Pierce Brosnan, it just got more and more. We're just trying to compete with the Michael Bay and the Bruckheimers. You know, we're just going to create a lot of explosions and all that. and the stories went out the window, really.
Thunderball has to be the worst of the songs, right? Or is it?
Yeah, that's Tom. I don't know. I think the one that the Quantum of Solace one may be the worst one.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's bad, but that's bad.
Yeah, you can't rag on Tom Jones with Thunderball.
that's garbage, right? Who sang that?
No,
the world is not.
The world is not enough.
Oh, okay. Quantum of Solace
is
too.
The movie itself is garbage.
But who did the last one? Quantum of Solace. Who did that?
Oh God, I don't remember. I'd have to go.
White Stripes or something.
I think it is one of the guys from the white, one of the people from the White Stripes or someone else.
Oh man, I'm so hip. I have a Blu-ray player, and I know who the White Stripes are. But the Thunderball, it's just the worst. When you have to use the title of the movie in a song, and the title happens to be Thunderball.
But it's Tom Jones, man. It can't be. It's not as bad. It's not as bad as the Madonna one, "Die Another Day," which I also.
I still listen to that song. I got that on my iPod.
Oh my God! Okay, good for you, man. More power to you. March to your own drummer, baby. That's what I'm saying.
That's right. Hey guys, I saw. I actually did see something lately. Recently.
Okay.
And it's really a fun movie, and I think it's right up your alley, both of you guys.
Oh, shit.
It is Nick Nolte. We're all crazy about Nick Nolte, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're all crazy about that crazy. He has a documentary about him.
Oh.
I know. It's called Nick Nolte, No Exit. And they interview people that have worked with him, like Ben Stiller and Patricia Arquette and Mazursky. But the interesting thing about it, it's got to be a little off-tune if it involves Nolte. In terms of the content and the interview content of Nick Nolte in this film, he interviews himself. He's dressed as a journalist on one side of the table, and he answers the questions about himself on the other side of the table wearing some kind of white kind of martial arts zen-looking getup. And it is it's really entertaining. And I've got the trailer for it. You want to hear the trailer?
Yeah.
It's called Nick Nolte No Exit. It's actually available now on demand. Here's a little taste of it for you.
There's an unpredictability about him.
Am I coming through? Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Some people would say off the screen as well.
We're driving in this Jeep. It's a knife. Dick takes the steering wheel off and hands it to him.
But you can't stop him. He goes from 0 to 100. You can't stop the freight train when it starts.
I'm sure Nick was compared to him. The next Brando.
What is great about Nolte in all his roles is that he's always kind of wrestling with the god, if not the big god.
Is there a specific reason you had to become an actor? Recognition, love, getting laid?
He exudes a sexuality because he's not conscious of it. I think Nick has a very strong sex appeal.
He was a beautiful looking guy. What did this do for you?
I was never sexually aroused by Nick, per se. The celebrity mugshot has become iconic.
When I looked at that mugshot of Nick Nolte, I thought, oh, there's the affliction that made affliction possible.
What do chemicals do for you? Put a little cocaine on the script. Every once in a while, I'd lean down and read a line.
Define crazy.
Do you want to shoot yourself? Boom, boom, boom. Are you a comedian?
Funny how?
He loves to just shock people.
Do you have 3 testicles?
I'm not sure how many.
He might have 6 testicles. I don't know. Isn't this kind of selfish? What are you most afraid of? You believe in God. How do you maintain sanity? Are you a whore? Are you talking to me? Because if you're going to be a whore, be the highest priced whore you can. Come on, come on, come on. Let's go on. Next question.
That sounds good. You sold me.
It's interesting. I tell you a story. I tell you the most interesting part of the movie, and I shouldn't because that means, you know, why bother watching it, but about the mugshot. He asked himself about the mugshot, and, you know, it's not a mugshot. He's not holding up the booking slate.
Mm-hmm.
He's not standing behind a wall that you stand behind when you have a mugshot taken.
Right.
That was taken at the hospital when the officer took him to the hospital to get his blood test. And the officer said, I'm just a big fan of yours. Do you mind if I take a photo of you in the hospital?
Oh.
And he said, all right, as long as you share the money that you get from selling it with all the other guys, And so there you go. It's not even a mugshot. And they say it's the most infamous mugshot when it's, that's not what it is.
No, not at all. Wow, okay.
Yeah. So will you be seeing that, Chris?
Oh, I would love very much to see it, actually.
Is that on demand, or?
It's on demand, yeah.
Okay, I thought I saw that, okay.
New awards. Of course, we're building up to the Golden Globes and then eventually the Oscars. So the online film critics voted, and they chose The Hurt Locker. Catherine Bigelow, Jeremy Renner, just across the board, The Hurt Locker. Best Actress, this is good. This is the surprise and the mm-hmm. pleasant one at that. Melanie Laurent for Inglourious Basterds for Best Actress.
Yeah.
Now, is that just an internet thing, or do you think it'll carry over to?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I do want to bring up something about Inglourious Basterds. While the internet, I noticed the internet critics, the younger critics were wild about it. I noticed in the press some liked it but weren't ecstatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm just saying that was an observation I made over the summer, like that weekend when it came out, and also just the reaction from Khan. But it could carry over. I do think the momentum is there.
Okay.
You'd
be pulling for it, right, Chris?
Be pulling for the film or for her performance?
For her performance. I mean, the film is going to be represented.
Yeah, I agree. I do feel like the movie is building up momentum, more so because it turned out to be kind of a weak year as far as Oscar bait goes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not a weak year, but there's no huge contenders like there are in other years. This is not a year where there's any one or two movies where you say, well, that's definitely going to take everything. A couple months ago, we might have said that Up in the Air was that movie. And certainly Up in the Air will be represented at the Oscars, but
right.
I feel like it's sort of losing a little bit of steam right now. People are seeing it and saying, yeah, it's pretty good, but is it, you know, like
best
movie
of the
year? I don't know. Probably not. So definitely Inglourious Basterds is going to be represented. Her performance, I don't know. She's probably got a really good chance, because if it's a weak year for movies, then it's definitely going to be a weak year for female performances, because it's always a weak year for female performances.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way Hollywood goes, unfortunately.
Do you think a weak year for female performances across the board? Because, I mean, there are a lot of great performances this year. I mean, every year, but especially this year, there's a lot of good performances. Sadly, they're smaller films, but I did see a lot of great performances on, and just the really great ones aren't going to get recognized. I don't think Abbie Cornish is going to get anything for Bright Star. I don't think...
Are you kidding? That's like one of the few front runners, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's not getting the.
It's kind of fallen out of.
It's kind of fallen out of the loop.
Yeah.
Bright Star is never really. It's considered a dark horse, but I mean, yeah, I agree with you. She is phenomenal in the movie. I mean, everyone's phenomenal in it, but it just doesn't have the momentum that you would think it would have had. I mean, it didn't even. Critically, it did not get the raves that I
yeah.
thought it would.
Bright Star had Oscar bait momentum
mm-hmm.
Before it came out.
Yeah. Before Khan, it had Oscar bait.
Yeah. It's fascinating, too, because they've made parables between this year and the possible race between Avatar, The Hurt Locker, and Up in the Air, with the year Titanic was nominated. And you had Titanic, which is obviously this year's Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
You had
LA Confidential.
LA Confidential, which
as good as it gets.
Yeah, and as good as it gets.
Yeah.
And so LA Confidential compatible with Hurt Locker in this analogy, and as good as it gets compatible with the other
it's
one
complicated.
I just mentioned.
Up in the air.
Am I losing my mind? I can't remember what I said 5 seconds ago.
No, that's all right, dude. That's okay. Do you really think this is between Cameron and Bigelow at this point?
All the way.
Okay,
I can't say that for sure, because Up in the Air, maybe. Up in the Air and Inglourious Basterds have a little bit of a shot. I mean, you can't dismiss them.
No, you can't.
If either one of them win, it won't be the first shock when they announce a Best Picture winner, you know?
Right. You think it's possible the other two could cancel each other out?
I don't know about that. I think that I don't know. I think
the comparison to that year is going to hold true. I really do. Avatar is. I loved the movie, mm-hmm. and it's complete. And I definitely thought it was going to be successful. But I didn't even think it was going to beat Sherlock Holmes the second week. And that doesn't have anything to do with how I feel about Sherlock Holmes or Avatar. You just don't see a lot of movies hold first place at the box office for 2 weeks in a row anymore. It very rarely happens, especially not when it's followed the next week by a couple more huge releases.
Right.
Yeah. And especially also if that next week happens to be Christmas and everybody wants to go see whatever's new. Well, everybody didn't want to go see whatever was new. They wanted to go see Avatar. Now, Sherlock Holmes did very well, too, as well as It's Complicated and the goddamn Squeakle. But what?
Oh, yeah, but that Squeakle, you know, people did go
made
see
a lot
it,
of money. You know, at Avatar, in all, in 3 weeks of release, it has gone down a total of something like 13%.
That's unheard
which
of.
Which is crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, that's
absolutely
insane. It's made $500 million already. Or is it a billion?
No,
it made a billion. You know, and that movie has no competition in January. Not really. I don't see anything ousting Avatar in January.
I don't.
Which
really.
Is exactly what happened
thing,
with. That's what happened with
Titanic. On maybe.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing family. There's nothing everyone can go to. Everyone can't go to Book of Eli, and I'm not sure that everyone would want to. Leap Year is not going to beat it this weekend. At least I hope not. Or that's a sign of the apocalypse.
I don't think anything that opens this weekend is going to beat it. I think this weekend it has it. Next weekend, maybe. The following weekend, was it Extraordinary Measures and Legion? And the following weekend is Edge of Darkness. I don't know. Edge of Darkness, maybe.
Edge of Darkness, maybe.
Because Mel Gibson hasn't been in anything since Signs as an actor, so...
Right.
There's a curiosity factor there. But, no, I think it has January all to itself, which means an incredible amount of money. And I will tell you this, as far as IMAX is concerned, the IMAX closest to me is sold out for the next several weeks.
Wow.
Okay, so I think Avatar is here to stay. And let me say this about Avatar. I liked it more than I ever thought I would.
I agree.
I'll say that right now. I never thought... I really got into it, to the experience of watching it, and I did enjoy it. I would like to see it one more time in the theater. I've only seen it once, but I would like to see it in the IMAX. But I really do feel it was much better than I could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. And ultimately, it doesn't matter. I mean, something will eventually knock it out of first place, but at this point it doesn't matter. If something knocks it out this weekend, which I agree probably won't happen, but that will be in its fourth week of release. That will be a month later something finally knocks it out.
Yeah.
But, you know, what movie finally knocked out Titanic? What was that?
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. And that was quite a while after.
That was over 5 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think here it might be the Wolf. Honestly, I think maybe the Wolf Man will be the one.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure I would go. I don't think it's going to have those kind of legs as far as first place goes. But even when something does finally knock it out, it's going to still be in the top. It's going to be in the top 10 for months and months to come, I would think. I mean, at least two more months it's going to be in the top 10.
Oh, yeah.
And so when Oscar time comes around, they're going to be dealing with this unstoppable force that's in the box office. And not only is it an unstoppable force as far as money goes, it really is a solid movie. It's not only a solid movie, but it's a solid movie-going experience.
Mm-hmm. It's groundbreaking.
It's groundbreaking in a way that is kind of difficult to ignore and probably not going to be happy with, not going to settle for only the technical awards. I do feel like it's going to be well represented among the prestigious awards. most likely not screenplay, but definitely director.
Oh, it's not director. I mean, that's a shoe-in right there for director. There's no way after all this he's not getting director. I mean...
Just to let everyone in the chat room know, if you're here for Matthew Broderick, his interview played during the first 25 or so minutes of the show. When the show ends, it'll be available for replay. like 15 or so minutes after this tonight's show ends, and you can listen to it to your heart's desire. Sunday, we have Michelle Moynihan, actress from Eagle Eye and Gone Baby Gone, and she has a new movie out called Trucker. Is it Moynihan or Monahan?
I think Moynihan, I think.
I thought it was Moynihan, too. I'll ask her. That'll be the first question I ask her tomorrow.
And then she'll hang up on you. Can't even pronounce
my
name.
That's terrible.
Like...
She's great. She's wonderful. I can't wait to talk to her.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, too.
Right, right, right. And then Marvin Hamlisch Sunday, too. And then we'll be having our Sundance show, and we got a lot of interesting possibilities for that Sundance show on next Wednesday. So listen out for that, and then we'll have our top 10 lists. Chris, top 10 of the decade. Jerry, top 10 of the year. Me, top 10 trends in movies.
I'm really curious about the trends. I'm really curious what your top 10 trends will be.
Me too. I haven't worked it out yet, but I have an idea. So, but it's definitely a decade to remember in terms of some trend-setting film-related movies.
Yeah, there's a couple that stick out right away, but it'll be interesting. It'll be an interesting list. How are we going to do that, by the way? Are we going to do one goes, one, you know, Jerry gives his... One and then me one and then you one or three each
I think that's an idea. Although I was thinking I wanted to do something completely different, and I was going to have Jamie and you just ask me, just you guys would give me the name of a movie, and I would tell you what I thought of it. No, at dead
what?
Serious. No, absolutely serious. Just to change it up, not to be so run of the mill, you know, and everything.
Yeah, but we can't predict what your list is.
I thought instead of doing the usual, number 10, number 9, you would just say, all right, what the fuck did you think of this movie? And I would just say, I mean, I think it would be so unpredictable. So it was just an idea I had to try to.
That's what we do every show.
I know, but I mean, it would just be groundbreaking, and doing the top.
It would be the Avatar of Movie Geeks United.
It would be the show that would. Yeah, I would be run out of town. But
well, as it stands, you can tune into our run-of-the-mill show where we give each of our top 10 lists on the 17th.
Okay, well, that's good. I'll be there.
Okay, I got some quotes for you. These are quotes that every movie geek should know, and everyone in the chat room can play along. It's interactive. Here's a quote. I don't know what this is from. Hang on. I guess I don't know.
Well, isn't this from Wired Magazine?
Is it from Wired? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's from Wired Magazine, yeah.
Okay. Here's one for you. If you think that by threatening me, you can get me to do what you want, well, that's where you're right. But, and I am only saying that because I care, there's a lot of decaffeinated brands on the market that are just as tasty as the real thing.
Real genius.
Oh, man.
That's good.
Okay. Character name.
Character name, Chris.
Good. Good job, man.
That's my name. That's an easy one.
That's true.
Also happens to be one of my favorite comedies from the 80s.
That is a great film. I mean, there's no doubt.
Here's another one. Bill, strange things are afoot at the Circle K. I'm not saying it like the character, obviously, but...
Is that the whole quote?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
Any idea in the chat room? Bill, strange things are afoot at the Circle K. All right. I'll let you guys work on that. Here's another one. Famous one. We've discussed it on the show before. Here you go, Jerry. Here's your question.
Oh, shit.
No matter where you go, there you are.
Oh, Buckaroo Banzai.
All right. Good. Good.
At least I got one right. Let that be known. I got one right.
Man, they got all these real genius quotes. Like, this is the only quotable movie on the planet.
Well, no, it's a great film, man.
It was very quotable.
We'll make more films like that. Jason says Bill and Ted.
You're right. Bill and Ted. Jason in the chat room? Great. Thanks for showing up, Jason. Let's see. What else we got? Some of these are just gimmies, like, you know, The Dude Abides, of course.
Mm.
Is that from Porky's?
Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, Die Hard, come on.
Yeah.
Wow, look at you. Okay, I didn't think you'd get that. Shall we play a game?
Oh, that could tie into tonight's guest, War Games.
That's right. Like the fella says, in Italy for 30 years, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed, but they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance.
Oh, I know that one.
In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. This is the gimme from this quote. They had 500 years of democracy and peace, and what did that produce? The cuckoo clock.
Greatest line ever said. Harry Lime.
The Third Man. That's a great movie.
That's an awesome movie.
Yeah.
It's just one of the greats.
What's this from, Chris? E.T. Phone Home.
It's from Tron. Oh,
Dances with Wolves, right?
That's right. It's from Avatar. Let's see. That's always how it starts. Then later there's running and screaming.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Right. I tried to sound as Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I was really impressed with that. That was really good.
I got to take a pause here, brief little detour.
Yes.
Speaking of Jeff Goldblum, I got to tell you live on the air here that I watched your movie Pittsburgh, and I did not laugh a single time.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. And I'm not saying this to be contrary. I just did not find it funny.
Oh, gosh.
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't really know.
And you love Jeff Goldblum.
I do. And I actually love Ed Begley Jr., and I think I'm the only person that's ever said that on Earth. I think he's a very funny guy.
And at one time in their life.
All right, sorry. Go ahead with the quotes.
No. That's fine. We can end with the quotes if you'd like to. Here's another one. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer.
Ooh, what is that?
Ooh, that's I know.
Someone can get that in the chat room.
Delivered very hammy. Okay, guys in the chat room, come on. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer.
Man. Tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, I know.
All right, here's another one, and we'll get right back to that if nobody guesses it in the chat room. I'm going to give you a little advice. There's a force in the universe that makes things happen, and all you have to do is get in touch with it. Stop thinking. Let things happen and be the ball.
Oh, isn't that Caddyshack?
That's Caddyshack. Ace Ventura, Z Parker, you're right, man. Ace Ventura
is... Back, man. Good job.
If I'm not back in 5 minutes, just wait longer. That's it. Invention, my dear friends, is 93% perspiration, 6% electricity, 4% evaporation, and 2% butterscotch ripple.
That's Willy Wonka.
Very good.
That is good.
All right, enough with the movie. Oh, hang on. Did you hear about Dune? They're remaking Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the director of Taken is the one that's remaking it. Now, this has had several incarnations, because at one point, Peter Berg was going to direct Dune.
Yeah, he left it to go make Battleship, the movie.
Well, you know...
you see, when that movie tanks, which it will, you sunk my studio, essentially, is what they'll say.
Yeah, I don't know. I like... Taken and everything. I don't know about this another one from Paris with Love, but I just don't. I think what people miss with Dune, and I know that miniseries that they made a while back was supposed to be good on sci-fi. Dune is a really psychological, really mental things going on in people's minds. It's not something that can easily make into a movie. Even someone like David Lynch had problems with it. And I do. There are parts of Dune I like a lot as a movie. I think there's some great things going on in the film, but it's a really I don't care what budget you have, how much CGI you have, or whatever the thing is. That's a really complicated thing to bring to the screen.
Yeah.
And,
to be fair, I don't think David Lynch even tried.
Really. Look, obviously, you watched that video a couple weeks ago about the.
I'm not even sure he read Dune.
But you read you saw the video where he talked about when he went to meet Lucas about Return of the Jedi, and that didn't really.
Yes. Happen. Yes.
Okay. In any. He was offered Dune, he took Dune, and He wanted, you know, he was, I mean, these are the choices offered to him. I mean, it's an impossible thing to make into a movie. I don't know. I guess they're going to make this, if he's the director, very action-packed, which Dune is not.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't, this is this thing. They're going to go back and they're going to make all these things. They're going to make things that they've never, they've been trying to make Foundation, Isaac Asimov's Foundation, into a movie for decades. And they're going to go ahead, they're trying to do that now to speak. And I just don't see this as a great idea.
Yeah. Isn't Tremors... Go ahead.
There are some books that are, and I'm not the first person to say this, it's the truth, there are some books that are just unfilmable, I think. And we learned this, I think, earlier this year with Watchmen, which, don't get me wrong, I liked Watchmen very much, but people's knock on it, ironically, was that it was too close to the book. Like, the thing about making a book into a movie is you have to walk this fine line of staying very true to the source material, but also bringing this visual element to it, which is original. And I feel like Dune is one of those books that can't be done with, too. Like, it's just like Confederacy of Dunces. I really don't think they're ever going to get that off the ground and have it be successful. Like, that's just not going to work. That character's too over the top. And every time it comes out that they've announced that they're going to make it, I feel the same way with it as I do about Dune, and the same way that I did about The Road, which is, that's not going to work. You have to read that book, and let's just leave it as a book.
I agree with you. I know I watched the director's cut. We talked about this the other night, but I watched Watchmen again, the director's cut, on Saturday night. I mean, it's better a second time, but it is one of those cases. It's so loyal to the source material, and I go back and forth on it. But I know what you mean, Chris. It's just one of these... I don't know. I just don't know anymore.
I thought Watchmen improved on the source material, even, because I think the source material's ending is a little bit weak, and I thought they did a little bit better job in Watchmen, the movie.
But it is a weak, it's anticlimactic almost.
It's extremely anticlimactic in the graphic novel.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's something I've always had trouble with. It's just, you have this great build-up, and then boom, it fizzles. I mean, you're just like, this is what this was all about.
Yeah, and I thought they solved that in the movie, but people still had a problem with the rest of it, which was you could not get a more true interpretation of the book than that movie. And obviously, this is a different case. It's a graphic novel, so they had visual plates to work with. But I agree with you about Dune. I think this is a mistake. And it's unfortunate, too, because I thought Peter Berg's The Kingdom was one of the more interesting movies of the last couple years, and I really thought he was going to go off like a bat out of hell and start making some really interesting movies. And then he goes and starts talking about, you know, he's making Hancock and Battleship and stuff like this.
this whole board game phase that we're about to enter is very disturbing.
Yeah, isn't Ridley Scott doing Monopoly?
Yeah, I mean, I just think this is
from the director of Blade Runner and Alien comes
how
Monopoly.
Do you know? I mean, you got Monopoly. I mean, I guess there's Candyland and Chutes and Ladders is coming. I don't know.
I can't wait. I cannot wait for Hungry Hungry Hippo, let me tell you.
Yeah.
That's going to be a Pixar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, let's just say this Twinkie represents the normal amount of psychokinetic energy.
Yeah.
All right. Let me finish, my gosh.
I'm sorry. Oh,
come on, don't make it so easy.
I know. I'm not writing these things. Some of them are so obvious. The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead, the road has gone, and I must follow if I can, pursuing it with eager feet until it joins some larger way where many paths and errands meet. And
Paul Blart.
I cannot say.
I've never seen
You're very close.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a clue on that one.
Yeah.
That's Lord of the Rings.
Holy shit,
Paul
one
Blart,
of my favorite
Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Paul Blart, yeah.
That shows how high I was the last time I saw Lord of the Rings.
What else is going on, guys? Do we need to cover anything else? Anything else on your mind, Chris?
No, we're kind of in the doldrums of the early part of the year as far as releases go, so it's kind of,
it's like,
you know, Getting a little bit annoyed this time of year, because it's like, how long are we going to have to wait for something interesting? And then it's like the early part of the year is always boring, and then the only thing that saves you is summer movies, and those are always a disappointment to me. So I guess I'm just sort of waiting for I'm waiting for Shutter Island.
Shutter Island. Yeah. And yeah. I'm waiting for Kick-Ass as well. Shutter Island and Kick-Ass.
You know, Shutter
I don't get the Kick-Ass thing. I don't know what's going on there. Like, maybe I didn't read the comic, so I'm not. I don't know what the hell is happening.
It's just little kids causing trouble, though. I think that's what everyone.
What's that?
Little kids causing trouble, though. I think that's the.
Isn't that Home Alone?
This is like the violent. This is like the Little Rascals meet Battle Royale. It looks like.
The worst movie of the year for you, Chris. What would you think? What do you think? What's your opinion?
Wow. I feel like Jerry might have an answer to this quicker off the top of his head than I
How about the most disappointing movie? I mean, I think is like how I look at it. And that would be Nine or Public Enemies. I mean, not the worst.
Yeah, public...
the most disappointing, I think, is because the worst, I mean, yeah, Transformers 2. I mean, come on. Yeah, you didn't walk in expecting much, but it's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's like saying Big Mama's House 2 was your least favorite movie of the year, but what were you expecting? Why did you go see it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think anyone can legitimately say that they were expecting anything that they did not get out of Transformers 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that. So I just go with disappointing and things that I had high hopes for. Like, I really thought we'd be talking about Public Enemies, and for at least for me, I thought I'd be talking about Public Enemies and 9, but they just were letdowns for me, so...
I feel like Year One was a pretty big disappointment too, with all of the with all of the hilarious guys that are in it, in front and behind the screen.
Yeah,
like that was a pretty big disappointment.
I watched that on DVD a couple weeks ago. Yeah, I mean that was
when you think back on the decade, and we talked about this, we talked about one of these titles in our show Sunday. If you think about the bad movies of the decade, there's Geely. But here's another one, Battlefield Earth.
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean,
ugh.
Yeah.
What are some others? Because I listened to something on NPR, and they had a special of the 10 worst movies of the decade. And both of those, of course, were represented. But I'm trying to think of the duds of the decade.
Well, those
Righteous,
are, those
Righteous
are two.
Kill.
Yeah, Righteous Kill, yeah.
Righteous Kill could definitely be...
God, how painful was that for me?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, my God, for everyone. I mean, you especially. I guess you felt it a little deeper than the rest of us. I mean, that was kind of like your second 9/11, sort of, I guess, in a way.
Jesus Christ, dude, that's a harsh indictment.
Gosh, Chris. I had to go to counseling after watching Righteous Kill. I hope Pacino redeems himself for the first time since Insomnia. I mean, that's the last time he was great.
I agree with that. I think that was the last time he was truly truly great. I think, you know, we forget because you try to put Battlefield Earth out of your mind, but that is truly one of these really god-awful films. What about Catwoman?
Catwoman is up there. Norbit is up there.
I never even saw Norbit, so, I mean...
Yeah.
I saw Norbit.
I saw Norbit, too. It was pretty bad.
I loved it.
No,
I'm kidding.
A lot of Eddie Murphy's movies, though, that he's made this decade, though.
Yeah, Pluto Nash.
Yeah, Pluto Nash is another one that was delayed for so long, and it finally came out, and it was just a disaster.
I got to say, I always felt like Gangs of New York was a huge disappointment.
Really?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it was the worst movie of the decade.
But it was disappointing to you.
It was absolutely disappointing to me, and it continues to be a disappointing movie to me. I don't know. Like, I feel like it was almost... He should have made the documentary. Like, I feel like he would have made a really, really interesting documentary about early Manhattan, because those were the most interesting things about the movie, and the story was certainly not interesting, and it was just went on far too long, and then it got all these award nominations, and it was like, what is everybody talking about? Like, if Daniel Day-Lewis is not in that movie, that thing is completely unremarkable, and nobody's talking about it, in my opinion.
Was it more disappointing for you than The Hottie and the Naughty?
I don't know if it can. I don't know. I mean, but
another dud, The Love Guru.
Well, yeah. But I mean, I don't even think that one's in a chance. Let's talk about a disappointment. A real disappointment, and it's a sequel, but it's something we thought, something I think a lot of us thought would redeem the first one, and that's The Attack of the Clones.
Yeah,
Attack of
that's
the Clones
true.
Sort of cemented this thing that Lucas had lost his way. We don't talk about it a lot because the third one is not as disappointing as the other two. I actually think the third one has some redeeming qualities, but not enough to justify ever making the prequel trilogy to begin with, because the first two are just... I won't lie to you. They're bore. They're disappointing. And I think Attack of the Clones is one of these things where you're watching it, and after you're done, you're like, my God, he screwed up his own thing.
Whose career had the biggest downfall this decade, do you think?
Whose career had the biggest downfall?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. I feel like maybe not the... I don't know. Biggest downfall might not be the way I would say it, but I will say that this decade has not been kind to Steven Spielberg.
Really?
Really? Well, yeah. Kind in terms of the recognition that he deserves?
Yeah. Well, not only the recognition that he deserves, but also the material that he's put out. I mean, he started off with, I don't have it in front of me, but from memory, I think he started off with Artificial Intelligence, which was, you know, by all accounts, everyone sort of felt like, yeah, nice homage to Stanley Kubrick, but I feel like Stanley Kubrick would have made the better movie. Minority Report was a slight uptick. And then Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, all decent, but sort of minor works. The Indiana Jones movie, debacle, and then Munich, another slight uptick, but we just haven't had a movie from Steven Spielberg in this decade that is jumping to my mind anyway, that was really deserving of that Steven Spielberg title.
See, for me,
Munich would have to rank as one of his best personally. I mean,
for me,
I like Munich is most
Munich AI film. Munich AI and Minority Report are among the most mature kind of movies that he's done.
I would definitely go with you on Minority Report and Munich. Outside of that, I feel like everything else in this decade was sort of minor. And again, like that's not really, I'm not knocking. Like I said, it would be hard for me to say that it would be like a downfall in his career. But I just feel like he was sort of missing as far as being kind of on the forefront and kind of influential in this decade, where he has been in every other decade, definitely.
Right.
Influential.
I understand.
This was the first decade.
I understand what you mean. What about Sean Connery?
Connery retired.
I know, but I mean his last movie League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and even before that, Finding Forrester,
and the Avengers. So that was
'90s,
right?
That was 98. But I mean, I think if the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen had actually was good and had done well, I think he would have made more movies. But he's kind of finished his career on a really just low.
Well, you know why he did that. You know why he did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Why?
Because he got offered The Matrix, the Lawrence Fishburne part, and he didn't understand it, so he turned it down. He got offered Gandalf and Lord of the Rings, and he didn't understand it, so he turned it down. So he read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he didn't understand it, but he wasn't about to turn it down.
My God.
Yeah.
Those are like Bill Murray kind of like... because he was offered Batman, The Witches of Eastwick, and wow.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting rationale. And Cruise. How about Tom Cruise? Well,
yeah,
he benefited, I think.
Yeah, as an actor. Well, I benefited. Are you kidding?
From this decade?
No, dude.
What are you,
he did some of his
smoking?
No. From his acting. No, forget the tabloids. I'm not. But when he does this thing on the sofa. And he goes fucking apeshit. The movies all of a sudden are just out of this world. I mean, even a little bit before that, forget everything else. Collateral, that's the apex, I think, of his career personally. I think that's just an amazing role. He's such a dick on the sofa that I thought it was like an advertisement. This is the character I play in War of the Worlds for the first, two-thirds of the movie. I'm an asshole in the movie. I'm going to be an asshole. So there. and I actually like him a lot in War of the Worlds. Lions for Lambs, he's the only good thing, I think. And I hate that movie, but he's the only good thing in the movie. But he is, you know, one of the best things in Valkyrie, and I'm not crazy about that movie. So I think as an actor, he's gotten better, but sure, yeah, I guess you could say the box office receipts aren't there to prove it for those last two films, but...
In terms of career downfall, in terms of people actually wanting to see Tom Cruise, that was at its peak. I mean, you couldn't get bigger than Tom Cruise in 2000, and now looking back on the decade, it's a different story. But
I do think that
Night and Day is a step in the right direction
yeah.
for him career wise.
I do not. Oh, man.
So you will not be there opening day or opening week.
I will not be there. I'm not saying I'm not going to see it. I just, everything, first of all, didn't we see this with Mr. and Mrs. Smith? I mean, doesn't this look pretty similar to that? And
right.
Second of all, the campy title, Night and Day. Oh, my God. It's just so schlocky and just night and day.
But
although he does look very funny in the preview, he does look very funny. And I like Tom Cruise, and I root for Tom Cruise. And I even like some of those movies you were just talking about that we talk about as shitty movies, like Valkyrie. I mean, I thought Valkyrie was a pretty good movie, actually, in spite of all the stuff around it. It just occurred to me, though, the one person that really I feel like this decade was most unkind to would probably be M. Night Shyamalan, because Sixth Sense came out in 99,
mm-hmm.
so that was literally like his last like really not only successful but critically acclaimed movie, and there was all this talk like the director of the next generation and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He literally has not just not fulfilled on that at all. In fact, every movie has gotten progressively worse to the point where Lady in the Water was just...
I think Lady in the Water is the worst of them. Oh, well, that and The Happening. The Happening. I thought that if he did The Happening as his first movie, maybe people would have... It would have be a different story, maybe. But it's just a bad movie all around.
I just want to say, and we'll get right back to Shyamalan in the closing minutes of the show, but I brought up Tom Cruise because it was just announced today that he's starring in a movie with Taylor Lautner. That's not a joke.
It was denied later, wasn't it?
Was it denied today?
I read this evening that he was not officially signed on for that movie. I think it was on Variety that I read that.
Wow. And meanwhile, MGM, the company that he's the president of, or whatever he does for them, is nobody's buying it. It's on the block, and nobody wants it. So
yeah, that's kind of representative of his career, right?
Yeah.
On the block, and nobody wants.
But what about? I think Unbreakable personally is my favorite Shyamalan movie, and I do like Signs. And I think The Village is getting this resurgence I've noticed from people. But yeah, Lady in the Water just blows.
I watched Lady in the Water again last week, and I will say, it's one of those out of control vanity projects.
Yeah,
like I don't care what anybody else thinks. This is my baby. I'm going to do it my way. And everybody's saying the script doesn't make any damn sense. It's no good. And yet he still goes through with it. But in terms of direction, it's one of his best directed movies.
What?
It is. The movie is a complete mess, but his use of camera in that movie is the most solid he's ever had. It's the most solidly lensed movie that he's done.
Okay, you go to sleep with that opinion. That's cool.
Yeah.
The movie
sucks. Sleep at night. I maybe that's true. I only saw it once. Actually, that's not true. I saw a little bit of it on cable. A couple years back and started vomiting uncontrollably. So, now, I can't get past the vanity part of it. I mean,
that's the part that really hurts the movie. I mean,
does feel, as you're watching it, I mean, it feels like, it's almost like, it's like watching someone masturbate in public. It's like so disgusting, and it's like, why is he doing this? And you can't look away. Like, I get caught up watching it when it's on cable. I always get caught up for like 10 minutes. Like, man, this is disgusting. Look at this. Ugh. I just can't
pay attention
to the lensing.
Yeah, the first three, I think the first three are really what he'll be, for right now, what he'll be remembered for.
I like Signs a lot. But, you know, with The Happening, that first 10 minutes is really promising. I mean, it's eerie.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like,
it just goes off the rails, man.
And then it's indulgent again. It's stupid, crazy, indulgent. Forget you. I know what I'm doing. The wind kills people, or the wind turns people bad.
And it talks to the plant. I mean, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, once again, the problem is not, just like a lot of his failures, in my opinion, like, the problem is not with the premise of the movie. The problem is in the execution.
Yeah.
No pun intended. It's just... It's really, really bad and sort of self-indulgent and just starts to become a little hokey, and you can feel him getting ready to pull the carpet out from underneath you. It's like, oh, where's the big
twist.
Surprise ending coming from? Well, the big twist is that his career's in the shitter. Huh. Like, that's the big twist, it turns out.
The performances in The Happening are god-awful.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, you can actually go on YouTube and find, like, montages of Mark Wahlberg footage from The Happening. Like,
what about, was it the thing, who was the guy, Andy Samberg, who made fun of him on Saturday Night Live for that? And
hey, goat!
Yeah. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But someone else brought up a good point. Nicolas Cage had a really bad decade. His movies were financially successful, but his... critically, though, with the exception of Adaptation and Bad Lieutenant, he really...
And Lord of War.
Lord of War, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
great movie.
I do like that movie.
Great
good
movie.
Good call, Chris.
And I actually like The Weatherman quite a bit. I feel like that was kind of an underrated movie.
He's good in The Weatherman.
Yeah, he is.
But you're right in terms of the fact that he's just continually going back to making these huge, big-budget, you know, whether it's Bangkok Dangerous or Knowing, which Roger Ebert seemed to love so
but
much.
He's dying,
Roger
so
Ebert.
Roger Ebert's dying, so we have to take a lot of these things at.
Did you see that he picked Synecdoche, New York as his best film of the decade?
I understand that perfectly. I understand why he did that.
I don't dislike the movie. I liked it. I thought it was an interesting movie.
But
best
you know,
film of the decade.
About? Chris, what's it about?
Well,
about death. it's about death, and I think he's at this point where he's like very reflective, and that's why a lot of his reviews, movies that he might not have liked, let's say 10 years ago, he's really turned. Well, I'm looking at these differently now,
and that's very ironic because you feel like dying when you watch Schenectady. but Nicolas Cage is the classic example of one for them, one for me, because we just mentioned four movies in which he's great,
mm-hmm.
four outside-of-the-box movies, and he's probably done, probably a little more than four of the sellout movies.
Well, he's done the two National Treasures, Knowing, Ghost Rider, Bangkok Dangerous.
Maybe one for them. Or three for them, one for me. But even having said that, a decade where you've got four pretty good performances and four pretty good movies is decent. However, Nicolas Cage is a punchline. He is definitely a punchline, first and foremost. I mean,
well, something's got to happen. If you do four movies a year, some of them have to connect. Some of them have to be good. Okay, guys, we'll be back on Sunday. We're going to close out. We got 1 minute remaining. Thanks, guys. A great lively discussion, a great show tonight. We appreciate everybody tuning in. We'll see you back Sunday. Michelle Moynihan, Marvin Hamlisch. Sundance next week. Big guests possible for Sundance show next Wednesday. So stay tuned to our website or our Facebook page, Add Us as a Friend, to find out who those guests might be. Chris, Jerry, thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, guys.